This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home and I'm shutting off all the stuff. It was raining this morning when I came in. So I had the windshield wipers going and I had the fan going and I had the radio turned on, which was what all that noise was. But I think we have that under control at this point. It is episode 363, which means that next week it will be 7 years worth of podcasts. I think that's right, right? 7 times 52, 350 plus 14, 364. Yes, this is 363. So next year, next week, 4 years worth of podcasts. Which is a milestone. So theoretically, what's going to happen is I'm going to get the kids and my beloved wife and the grandkids, and we're all just going to talk together and figure out and just kind of revisit the year. So it should be fun. It should be fun. If they have time. So I'm going to do my best to get that done. And maybe if it doesn't get then, we'll do it at 365, which will be the first podcast of 8 years worth of podcast. So we'll figure out some way to do it. Everything is puttering along. I did land the... Well, first of all, work is puttering along. Lots of things going all at the same time at this point. We've got a bunch of sub-projects running simultaneously. And so a lot of balls in the air, a lot of plates spinning, you know, but that's okay. We're making progress on all of them. And then we have other little side things that are flying in from, you know, the shadows. And I have a policeman right behind me. So we're going to see if for some reason he thinks he needs to pull me over. I better pay attention to how fast I'm going. So if you hear a boop, boop, that's, I've got a policeman. Oh no, he's going to pass me. Okay, he knows that everybody goes slower when they're around policemen. So there he goes. It's an unmarked policeman too. So he's super secret. Anyway, so work is going fine. You know, just going every day, in every day, setting them up, knocking them down. It was... little bit of a transition on Monday, but that was expected because I'd been off for a week. So there's always a little transition when you get back, you know, to kind of move back into it. But got done, didn't quite get everything done this week that I wanted to, but that was because there were other things that, you know, were higher priority that got slid in on top of it. And so those things had to be done. But everything seems to be kind of taking the amount of time that it needs to take, and we're fine. Everything's fine. I notice a lot of the police cars now, they only have like one spot that's actually got all the caging stuff off. And every time I see one of those, I think, what if you got two people? Do they have to sit on each other's laps? Or how do they make that work? Oh, we have two police cars now. So, anyways, so that's all going along fine. As far as the book goes, I think I'm renaming it instead of Windfall, A Seed in Secret. I think instead of that, it's going to be Windfall, A Seed Discarded. I think that might be a better title for where it sits right now. That might be subject to change, but we're there. I did land the book last Saturday. Yay! So I'm reading through it now. I think it's fine. When I get to this part of the process, there's always the doubts at this part. This could have been better. You could do this. But then I have to remind myself, look. You already know what all is going to happen here. So, you know. If you didn't know what all was going to happen and you were just reading it through on the first time, then it would be fine. So, but even with that, as I'm reading through, I think it's fine. It's a little... I think it'll make people think, which is one of my big goals. And it will move us to the next step in the story. I was starting to think about book five as I was reading through book four, and I was like, oh, what's going to come? What's next? What's next? What's next? Because I'm wrapping up a theme that got started really in book two. And so by the time we start book five, that sub-story is going to be done. The cool thing about what I'm doing now is that since I'm running this against the poem The Second Coming by Yeats, I can really sort of hinge around whatever the next line is in the poem. In addition to that, that poem has given me this overarching structure of this first set of eight books is about X, and the second set of eight books is about Y, and the third set of eight books is about Z. And so that gives me something to go off of when I'm trying to decide what comes next. And for instance, I was thinking like, oh, well, maybe book five, we're going to be on some secret mission in the night. And then after I thought that, I thought, no. Because that's not what the first eight books is about. But, oh, that's right. So I think book five, we're going to be pulling back into the realm now. After we've had a few outings in the night, I'm going to start pulling back into the realm, and really what the first eight books is about is really about the attitudes of the realm towards the night, towards shadow, and how those modify once it becomes more and more apparent that the night is actually a credible threat. And one of the things that makes this kind of easy is this is a rough analogy. See, it's not a direct analogy, but it's a rough analogy for what's going on in the United States right now with ISIS and how ISIS is affecting those countries and how ISIS drove out all the Christians. Was it ISIS or Syria? Drove out all the Christians who were in Syria, and you had this mass exodus. I mean, this is right down the line. Because the current book I'm working on, the line from the poem for it is mere anarchy is loosed against the world. The next line is the blood-dimmed tide is loosed. It's a great poem. Turning and turning, the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer, things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. I mean, how more appropriate to our time frame is that? So, fun stuff. Just fun stuff. So I'm now kind of crafting that story that is book five. I know what the elements are I've got to get to. And I'm sort of crafting the story. I've got kind of a big thing coming up. Probably, well, I know how book eight ends. I know that for sure. And so I'm constantly looking forward to what is going to happen in book eight. And I'm setting up for the maximum ire and disappointment with the realm at that point in terms of what they do to one of the major characters. So it's just getting all those pieces, which I don't actually have them on under control, but getting all those pieces in play to where I can link them all together. It's really an interesting challenge. This is so interesting. I love this. Anyways, so the plan is to finish the first read through this weekend, then turn around, start another read through next week, get that done by the end of that week. then start working on the cover. Have to find some kind of a little nightshirt thing for my grandson and a little sleepy time cap. Hope to get that under control this weekend as well so that we're ready to shoot him and put him on the cover, because this cover is Wee Willie Winky from a nursery rhyme standpoint. And then I've been collecting images for the cover, but I thought I had them, and then I tried to put them together, and it was no good. So I've got to redo that. But that's okay. We'll get it. We'll get it. We'll get it. We'll get it. It'll be fine. Be fun. Be fun. It's great exercise. This week, just a really, really quick little thought that I'm going to see if I can stretch out to 10 minutes. I've been watching... this isn't the thought. I've been watching some videos that a buddy that I had dinner with last Thursday pointed me towards. And I've been enjoying it. I've been enjoying them. They're good. Darren Wilson is the name of the director. And there's been four movies that I know about. There's Finger of God, Furious Love, Father of Lights, and Holy Spirit. And they're good. They're good. I may talk about them a little bit next week or the next week, but I've enjoyed them. For this week, though, this was one of those articles that, well, whenever, next week or next week, depending on how we do the 7 years worth of podcasts, so. This week, though, I came across one of these articles that, you know, you read and you go, uh-huh. That seems pretty obvious, but it's good someone did the research. Apparently, Google has been wanting to figure out how teams really work the best together. So, you know, the tech Google said, we want to know the secret to build a more productive team. That's what we want to know. And so they charged a team to do this. And the project was called Project Aristotle. It took several years. It included interviews with hundreds of employees, an analysis of data about people on more than 100 active teams at the company. They looked very closely and looked very hard trying to find what is the magic formula. You know, what is that perfect mix of individuals that are necessary, as the article said, to form a stellar team. What's interesting is that company later came out and said, you know what? We were dead wrong. And in fact, Google's data-driven approach just really ended up highlighting what leaders in the business world have known for a long time. That this is pretty simple. That the best teams, are the teams where they respect one another's emotions and they are mindful that all members should contribute to the conversation equally. This Project Aristotle eventually concluded that it's really has less to do with who is in a team and a whole lot more to do with how the team members interact with each other. So what does that mean? How the team members interact with each other? Well, they said it really echoes Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and that is that members of productive teams take the effort to understand each other, find a way to relate to each other, and then try to make themselves understood. And honestly, this is where I come in as a business consultant. My job, part of my job, is to be that glue in meetings where I make sure that everyone is understood, that people don't walk out of the meetings thinking no one heard me, or I'm not sure what we decided in there, but I'm just glad it's over. You know, that's my job. My job is to make sure that doesn't happen. We just had a meeting this afternoon. Really pretty technical financial stuff. And in fact, what I thought was going to be the conclusion of the meeting was not the conclusion of the meeting. Because I misunderstood one term that was being bandied about. But as far as I know, there were no problems with that. Because where I needed clarification, I just pushed forward and asked for clarification. And where I thought there might be gaps in what person's understanding, certain people's understanding of what the consequences of the decisions they were making, what those consequences were, I just would pause and I would say, okay, let's clarify. What we're saying is such and such and such and such. And where I come in really handy is the fact that I am coming in as an outsider, and the people I'm working with have worked together for years and years and years, but that doesn't necessarily mean they all truly understand each other when they're talking. And so what I can do is I can use a little of my confusion to say, okay, let's just pause for a moment here and make sure I understand what's going on. And I can revisit, and then I can make sure that as we have those discussions around the table, every opinion that's expressed is given, it's given a fair hearing, and everybody feels like what they said actually made it into the discussion. And that's my job. And it's interesting because I have had on this project certain individuals who have said, you know what, I know that so-and-so knows exactly what they're talking about, and that person has done a great job for the organization, and I so much appreciate that person's work. But there's a whole bunch of time that person opens their mouth, I have no idea what they're saying. And this is between two people who really, really need to communicate, really, really. And so I come in between those two, and I told this person, I said, okay, that's what I'm here for. And this person said to me, yeah, well, that's, I understand when you talk. I said, okay, well, that's what I'm here for. I'm here to interface between the two of you to make sure that communication is going both ways and what you're saying is understood. And usually I can get to the whiteboard, or we can back up and I can put it in different terminology. And the whole time I'm doing that, I'm looking at the technical guy and saying, okay, correct me if I'm saying something wrong. And we can get it done. But this concept of understanding each other, that's really, really important. That Google's findings is that there is this concept of psychological safety, in which the model of the teamwork is that members have a shared belief that it is safe to take risks and share a range of ideas without being humiliated. And Google said it this way: do you feel like you could ask what the goal was without sounding like you're only the one out of the loop? Or did you opt for continuing without clarifying anything in order to avoid being perceived as someone who is unaware? And this is part of my job too. Because when I'm in a meeting with a group of people and we're going through ideas, I'm constantly watching expressions. And if I see that someone is looking like they're confused or someone is looking like, you know, this is not right, I will just stop the meeting. And I will look at that person and I will say, now, is there something that's bothering you about all this? Or is, I'm getting my mail. You know, is there something we could do differently? Do you have another idea on this? Because I want to make sure that people are heard. Because sometimes when that happens, what comes out of that person's mouth is a really good idea. And once they actually feel like it's okay for them to say it out loud, everybody else in the group kind of looks at each other like, well, that'll work. So that's what I'm constantly trying to do. I'm watching. I'm making sure people are interfacing. I'm making sure that people are understanding, because that's my job. I'm backing into my garage. One moment. So, you know, when I read this article, I was like, well, yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. And really, what it comes down to, well, let me just finish up with the last page I had here. He said, Harvard Business School professor Amy Edmondson explored the concept in a 1999 study, which concluded that psychological safety boosted performance in teams. Google now describes psychological safety as the most important factor to building a successful team. And the article concludes with, in short, just be nice. And really, that was the title of the article. And when I read it, you know, I went, well, yeah. The good title of the article is, after years of intensive analysis, Google discovers that the key to good teamwork is being nice. Because spirit breeds success. Flesh breeds destruction. And being nice is part of spirit. It doesn't mean that you can't stand up for what you believe is the right thing to do. It doesn't mean there can't be healthy discussions. It does mean that there is no disgust. There is no condescension. You know, there is no sneering. There is no contempt. None of that. And we allow each person to make the contribution they're going to make. That doesn't mean everybody's contribution is going to be what we eventually do, but we're going to listen to it. And I personally have found this works really well. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.